And welcome back to another episode of Aesthetic Revolution, the podcast. I'm Dr. Ed Zimmerman, your host, and our moderator and the gal who'll keep me from diving down rabbit holes today is Stacy Taylor Zimmerman, my better two-thirds, our director of aesthetics, and does everything that I don't do. So, as you know, this podcast is all about aesthetics from forehead to feet and everything in between. And we thought we would start today at the very top, because we see a lot of folks come in, male, female, young adult to senior, who come in for facial evaluations. They don't know what it is that is making them look tired or making them look like they don't like the pictures that are being taken of them or their little selfies and things like that. And so they come in and say, you know, fix it. And very often we'll ask them to bring in some pictures that they like from earlier in life, depending on how old they are. We like the pictures to be at least when their face has come off the assembly line, which means in their early to mid-20s. After that, the body starts to involute. But as we come off the assembly line and we have the maximal construction of our skeleton and the maximal thickness of our subcutaneous fat and the most muscle and the thickest skin probably that we're going to have in our lifetime on this planet, well, these are things that gradually evolve or devolve, and that's what people start to notice. They start to notice the laxity. They start to notice the dynamic and static wrinkles. They start to notice the pigmentation and the vascular ectasia, the changes in the contours and proportions and relative things. So that's what we thought we'd talk about today.
Yep.
Okay. And so when Stacy talks to a patient initially to try to ferret out what it is they want, so we can make best use of our time, she goes through all those kinds of things. Mm-hmm. And she looks at things as well from a master esthetician point of view. So she's hyper-focused on the texture, the tone, the pigment, the colors, the overall clarity and health of the skin. And I'm looking a little bit more at proportion. So between us, we evaluate color, which is the vascular ectasia, the pigment, all those kinds of things, their ethnicity, what they bring to the table, their genetic heritage, what their propensity to change in terms of exposure to solar radiation. So UV radiation, 320-ish nanometers up to about 500 nanometers of UVA and UVB causes changes in pigmentation, DNA to break down. Your little telomeres get upset and bent out of shape and they don't repair damage as well. And so the part of this aging of the skin and stuff that skin, the largest organ of the body, is exposed to is part of what we treat and need to encompass. So color, texture, which is the little fine, I call them watermarks. So the chicken pock marks, the acne scars, the little fine textury sort of sandy looking things that we see on the skin.
And the texture as we get older, kind of, I always kind of describe it as that orange peel kind of texture.
A little peau d'orange.
Yeah, as we get older, we start to see that.
Yeah, and as the skin thins, it noticeably changes from a nice, vibrant, thick consistency to more of a tissuey paper consistency. Mm-hmm. So color, texture, tone. Tone, you know, is a heritage kind of thing. So our darker, thicker skin types, so people of Mediterranean descent, African-American descent, if that's still a proper politically correct term, but, you know, certainly people who have inherited darker, thicker, oilier skin are going to have different requirements from our Scotch, Irish, Germanic, Eastern European types of people who have a thinner skin and a doughier tissue as they get on in life. So color, texture, tone, tightness. This is another genetically heritable trait. Some people are going to maintain their skeletal formation and they're going to maintain subcutaneous fat and maintain the amount of elasticity in their skin and underlying structure, and some are not. And so we'll talk about that. So color, texture, tone, tightness, you know, all part of the same thing. So elasticity and tightness, that's when we talk about, do we inflate or do we pull tight or do we do a combination to restore the color, look, contours and proportion of youth.
Let me just interrupt you real quick. So kind of, you're kind of leaning towards the aging patient, but we do have a lot of patients. Yeah. Cause you know, we have a lot of patients that come in and maybe don't have a real defined jawline, maybe don't have high cheekbones. And so they're coming there.
And they'd like to.
Yeah. And they'd like to. And so we're looking at them in a different way.
Sure.
Too. So it's not just an aging patient. It's absolutely a patient that just wants to kind of change the contours of their face.
Realistically,
yes, absolutely. Yeah. So let's just include those patients.
But I think now's a good time to mention that people come to Aesthetic Revolution because we recognize that what you see in the mirror as we evolve and progress through your aesthetic treatments and maintain them has to be something that your brain is comfortable with. So if you're coming here, you're looking for something that's going to be more artistically done than looking done. It's going to be something that's going to hopefully represent that you had a home run in the genetic pool of having appropriate proportions and contours to make you happy when you look in the mirror and had a nice restful weekend, not like you've been overdone or had something done. And I talk to people about, I'm not going to make your cheeks Jersey-licious. I'm not going to turn your chin into the Jay Leno of chins. That is not appropriate for the rest of your face in terms of contours and mixes and things like that. Is that fair?
Yeah, absolutely.
So, and we progress a little bit at a time with frequent looking in mirrors together to make sure that we are not turning you into the Pillsbury Doughgirl or Pillsbury Doughboy and just helping you evolve into the best contour you can be, the best texture you can be, the best pigment you can be for you at this time. Mm-hmm. So color, texture, tone, tightness, volume, because if you have a balloon and it's all deflated, and then you go through the first 20 some years of life and it's all inflated and shiny and strong and happy, and then as you start to get older, you start to lose a little inflation. And that warbly balloon isn't as shiny and tight and pretty and new. And that's part of what we're doing is to replace those things. So volume plays a key role in the appearance of aging as well as the appearance of youth and health and all things for people who haven't lost a lot of volume. Mm-hmm. Some people just aren't granted a lot of volume when they're born. And, you know, we can certainly help that with a receding chin or a smaller nose that we can artistically enhance. Color, texture, tone, tightness, volume, proportion. Mm-hmm. Proportion is something that's very critical. And certainly when I sculpt, we're using calipers to look at proportion. But one of the things that works really well is that I can put a mirror in front of the patient and we can look at the proportions on their face in this case, but it really works for the whole body, and discuss things that are in or out of proportion and the possibilities on the spectrum of less invasive to more invasive, or blends of those things that we can do. What am I leaving out?
I think you covered it.
Okay, so color.
Those are all the things that we go over.
Yeah, so when someone comes in and the first thing we do is we look at color, and we look when they don't have makeup on, at what the underlying skin type is, a Fitzpatrick type, if they're almost albino and have light colored skin with red hair, you know, they may be a Fitzpatrick 1, if they're prone to freckling and things like that. If they have, as when they were younger at least, darker hair, darker eyes, they sunburn when they're first put in the sun, but they will eventually tan and they don't freckle a lot, they might be a Fitzpatrick 3. Other people who are Asian, Middle Eastern, Mediterranean, Latin, those are darker skin types, progressively darker, that don't sunburn, don't freckle necessarily, and tend to have more robust, oilier, thicker, more elastic skin and tissue. So everything has to be calculated, but those people also will pigment some. So if you use an energy device to shrink wrap the skin or to cut something out versus cold steel, you have to be aware that there can be a pigmentation, an inflammatory process during the healing that can leave them with a brownish halo of pigment that may or may not go away depending on what it is and how you do it, that we need to be aware of and prepared to either address or avoid as time goes on. So color, pigmented lesions, vascular lesions are primarily the things we're looking at. And at Aesthetic Revolution Las Vegas, we're 5,300 square foot of space. We have the entire electromagnetic spectrum as far as technologies available, from lasers, light, radio frequency, electromagnetism, as well as the chemical peels, and then all the things we do in our fully accredited operating room to address these things. So by having many, many hammers, each nail gets the right hammer. It's not you have one hammer and all the nails look alike. We have, over the past 2 to 3 decades, brought together a group of technologies and continue to curate those technologies to make sure that we maintain the state of the art in terms of being able to treat people and get them to their best form with the least amount of risk and the most amount of economy.
Yes.
Okay, so color, texture, tone, tightness. So we were going to talk about proportions.
Right.
So when we're sculpting, you know, one of the things we do when we have a model is we use calipers, and the calipers will take a shape or a distance and reduce it from the size that we measure on the human being down to a smaller size in scale. But an easy way to show that to patients is to put them in front of a mirror and just to use any set of measuring calipers or devices. So we're going to sit forward here just a minute, and I'm going to demonstrate on Stacy the rule of thirds and the rule of fifths. The midface maintains its volume throughout life the best of the forehead, the midface, and the lower face. And so if we use the midface as our ruler, and you can see in her from the bridge of the nose down to the middle of the upper lip, there's a third. And then if we go up, here's a third up here. So from her, the root of her nose up to her hairline. Now her hairline may go a little bit higher. She's hiding under the bang. She may have a 5 head instead of a 4 head.
Yes,
and
I
that's
do.
A more of a regal presentation that we want to honor and respect and not necessarily take away. And then on the lower third of the face, again, if we go from the middle of the filtral pillars down to the chin, you can see she's got almost optimal proportion, middle, lower, and upper face. She happened to pick the right parents, so she was born that way, and we haven't done a whole lot over the years to help her maintain that. But not everybody is. Many, many people have a chin that's shorter or has regressed. And where I used to put in surgical chin implants, but that was right along the edge of the bone of the chin, it only went so far. Now with fillers, and we've had other podcasts where we've talked about the kinds of fillers and the different uses of fillers and such, we can add length to the chin. We can add a little elevate, a little projection to the chin, and we can use fillers to artfully transition from the edge of the mandible, the bone here, up to the lower lip and support that so that it lifts the lower lip and gets rid of the resting bitch face and gives you a more youthful presentation. In women, chins are generally about the width of the lower part of the nose. In guys, chins are generally more like the width of the corners of the mouth, depending on how much of the mouth is showing. So our women have a smaller, more petite chin, not necessarily pointier, but more petite. It can be squared off. It can have a little cleft in the middle. It can be a little butt chin. So lots of variations there that we want to respect and honor. We have the rule of thirds going up and down. We have the rule of fifths going across. So if we roughly measure Stacy's eye, and there's a fifth, and if we measure from inner canthus to inner canthus, there about is a fifth. And then if we measure from the lateral canthus out and we see where her cheekbone and zygoma and ear are, she's framed beautifully at about another fifth there. So fifths across, thirds up and down is a reasonable place to start the conversation on facial proportion. Now, the two sides of the face are sisters, they're not identical twins. Remember that embryologically, we all start off as a tube, and that tube elongates, invaginates, and comes around and meets in the middle. And that inside that is where our organs develop. On the outside, that's where our outsides develop. And so that's one of the reasons that in our face, one side of the face may project a little more, one's a little more recessed. One side's a little higher, the other side's a little lower. So the two sides are not identical folded twins. And teleologically, it makes sense. In order to have depth perception, for instance, the eyeballs can't be at exactly the same place. One has to be a little higher or lower. One has to be a little forward or back to have that definition, to have depth perception. Hearing's the same way. When we do a facelift, we all know that our ears are a little different. One's set further back, one's a little higher. That allows us to place sound in space. And that's a survival trait. So that has been continued through all living things, as far as I know. And so we don't have to be perfectly symmetric. The models we see on the magazines that are more symmetric are unusual. And that may or may not be a survival thing. They have to survive on their looks, not on their ability to know how far away or hear where danger is.
Well, it's easy to Photoshop a picture now and make it look perfect. Like they're perfectly symmetrical. So,
and you know, we spend a lot of time taking digital pictures from all angles, from above, from front, from below, in order to show people that the two sides are a little different. And that's okay. That's part of their beauty. They don't have to be perfectly symmetric. And then as we move towards our treatments, we try to improve symmetry. But perfection is the enemy of good. I can get gooder, and that needs to be enough, because perfection is a fleeting and often unattainable or unmanageable thing, and you'll drive yourself nuts and spend a whole lot of money trying to get there. But better is better. Now, more proportions. The golden rule talks about a number which is felt to be the proportion between the upper lip and the lower lip, or the width of the eye and the crest of the cheek, or the length of the nose and the width of the nose. And so we talk about 1 to 1.618. And if we measure with some people, again, it's the beginning of the discussion to say your upper lip may be a little bit larger than your lower lip. But guess what? Not everybody is. Some people, their lips are almost identical. Some people, their upper lip is larger. But it gives you a basis to start the conversation. And, you know, certainly, you know, when we talk about this part of the upper lip to the amount of distance from the lower lip down to the tip of the chin, some people either are or have gotten so much smaller that it's 1 to barely 1.5, and it may need to be 1 to 2 or 1 to 3. So again, part of the conversation. In general, the biggest bang for the buck, I think, in most people, and this is a negotiation, this is a discussion when we're talking about facial, you know, contours. But when people meet you, they look in your eyes. They look in your eyes, they scan down to your chin, they come back to your eyes, and whatever is in between, the brain registers in terms of, are they youthful? Are they healthy? Are they intelligent or not? So anything that's in between, whether it's an elevated mole that reminds you of Aunt Sally, so maybe it's in family heirloom and you don't want to smooth it, flatten it, remove it, whatever, or a wrinkle or a scar or a variation of hair on the hair pattern on a male, things like that, the brain registers those things and kind of takes it into account. We don't even consciously think about it. But if you're going to have people, when they meet you, look you in the eye, then certainly the eyes may be the first place to consider aesthetic changes if they're not everything they could be. So we talk about, you know, how awake does a person look? How open is the eye? How deep is the eye set? Is there a lot of skin that's coming over the upper lid? Is there a lot of laxity in the lower lid that it's all crepey and crepe papery? And maybe there's an edge of an orbit that shows a lot because they've lost cheek projection that would pull the under eye skin on stretch. And in doing so, there's a ridge at the edge of the lower orbit there. Lots of variations there that we talk about.
Yep.
Okay. So, you know, that's part of the evaluation of color, texture, tone, tightness, volume, proportion, and then contour. So one of the other things that we look at are the contours of the face. So for instance, Stacy beautifully covers her forehead all the time, so we can't tell. But when we put a hairband on, some patients will see that the lateral brow that in their early pictures used to have a lovely arch or used to be flat but straight across, and sometimes their brows start to come down laterally. And that loss of volume in the lateral forehead area allows the brows to come down laterally. In fact, the loss of volume in the top of the head allows the whole forehead to slip forward, the brows to come down, and give us what appears to be extra skin on the upper eyes. So whether we talk about using an old style forehead lift, used to make an incision all the way across, pull the forehead up. It also pulled the hairline up at the same time, often made things behind it numb and left a scar that was perceptible, not terribly perceptible, but perceptible. We don't do that kind of lift anymore generally, but you know, that lifted everything up and it opened up the eyes. And, you know, these days, sometimes if people have a very long forehead or a 5 or a 6 head, we'll do a in front of the hair. It's actually about 10 hairs back, pretracheal brow lift, where we lift either at the level of the skin or the level of under the bone where it connects to, or under the muscle, sorry, where it connects to the bone above the periosteum. We lift those muscles or we lift that skin. And the incision is hidden up here, undulating in the hairline. Over on the temples, an incision can be made where we're lifting the lateral brows alone, or sometimes you'll do the two together. You used to do endoscopic forehead lifts where you had 5 little incisions that were back in the hairline. Everything was loosened up, everything was lifted up, and then sutured up for a while. A while being 3 to 5 years generally for that kind of less invasive lift.
Let's stop for a second, because one of the things we hear a lot, and a lot of people will come in and be complaining about, is the bags under their eyes. Mm-hmm. And not all bags are the same. So let's talk about the different things that we see that cause that bulging.
So that's a whole nother podcast, but briefly, there are the bags that are at the edge of the orbit and up, which is usually pseudo herniation of fat, the fat that surrounds the eyeball. The eyeball sits in a bony cave, and around that is fat that protects the eyeball. So from trauma coming towards it, it helps shield the eyeball. When you close your eyes and your eyes rotate up, the fat pad comes up with it. When you look down and you're closing your eyes, you're closing your lids, the fat rotates forward and it shields the eyeball a little bit. When your eyes are wide open, those fat pads are back behind, unless the ligaments have relaxed or that fat has herniated or pseudo herniated a little bit forward. And it shows more below when the cheek fat has deflated and the edge of the orbit shows. Now, there's also this area here that's between 2 ligaments. So there's some ligaments that retain the tissues up and keep our various superficial, mid, and deeper fat balloons where they're supposed to be. And so one of those ligaments comes right along the edge of the orbit here, and one comes further down here. And in between them, you can sometimes see a malar puff or malar fat pad or allergic shine, or we have lots of things we call them.
Would this be a festoon?
So a festoon. And so, you know, those are things. And in each individual, our obligation is to decide whether to shrink wrap around it, to use energy from underneath, with an insulated, your modality.
So describe what that is exactly. You described the ligaments, but this is fluid that builds up there.
Well, but it's fluid in a sponge. It's not like fluid I can stick a pin in.
Okay. So how come some people will notice it certain times of the year, or maybe after, you know, they don't always notice it as large as other times?
It's a moving target.
Okay.
So festoons are a moving target. It has to depend. It certainly depends on what your sodium intake is, your genetic preponderance, how hydrated you are, how much sleep you've had, or do you have any allergies going on, any of those things, any kind of inflammation. And when we do fillers and toxins, we cause an inflammatory response or a trauma each time we put that little needle or cannula into the area. And if someone unintentionally sets up a wall or dam of fillers, then the inflammation sits down on top of it and the festoons become even more prominent. And, you know, you can treat them with anti-inflammatories, but, you know, the key is not to cause a dam. So we have very special ways of putting little tent poles of fillers under this area and using energy to shrink wrap what's above. And what's inside, we can go in with insulated radio frequency needles or lasers or plasma underneath to shrink wrap and tighten that tissue down inside. So there's lots of ways to treat it, and everybody is different. In all these years, no two people have really been treated exactly the same way. Mm-hmm. And then you compound that with the dynamic wrinkles that are around the eye from the orbicularis oculi muscle that surrounds the eye like a donut. And when it contracts, it causes the happy lines. But the happy lines, if you look carefully, go all the way around. So there may be compensatory pull here if you only relax with a neuromodulator out here. And that may make your malar puff appear to come forward even more. So lots of things going on there. And it's an orchestra of interaction between the muscles, the volume, the movement of the skin, and how the muscles move over the bulges of the skeleton. So almost like playing a musical instrument and the frets on a guitar or a bass, you have to find the right places, because the muscle that goes from the corner of the eye down to the corner of the mouth, if your cheek is nice and full, that muscle is going up and over the deep fat pads. And as those deep fat pads go away, that muscle or string is elongated. It's not as tight. And the balance of the corner of the mouth, which usually lifts up, is now being pulled down by these muscles that have a shorter throw down below and don't have to go over a fret, if you will. Mm-hmm. So a lot of what we do in faces is balancing the upper and lower pulls of the muscles as well.
So you really need to have somebody that really knows their anatomy.
Certainly
in order
helps.
To inject and to fix the symmetry. I mean, if you can't just go in there and start, you know, filling up stuff, and which is why we see people walking around with crazy looking faces,
crazy presentations.
Yeah,
our Marvel characters.
Yeah, I know I think this discussion can go much longer.
Sure.
So maybe if we kind of make this several parts, and we talk. You know, we've talked about the eyes today, and we can maybe talk about the nose and mouth and chin in our next podcast.
Some of my
podcast.
Favorite areas, and the neck.
We can make it, and the neck. Oh, that could be all on its own.
Yep.
But yeah, so maybe we can make this in several parts, and we can really get in depth on each one of those areas.
At least depth enough, and then people can ask questions. Because that's what happens, is we open the door, we give people a chance to think about it, we put together some written evaluations of things they can think about. And then they ask more questions until they get to their place of being educated and wanting to proceed. And it's a moving target. There's new technologies, new techniques, new fillers, new toxins coming up all the time. So it's imperative you work with providers who learn all the time. You know, we read every night. And for those of us who teach, we have to really be on top of it, because we need to know the answers, or admit we don't know and know where to find the answers to help the next generation or our peers who are up and coming in these areas. So this is a fascination of ours, and hopefully we haven't bored you. I think for now, thank you so much for listening to our podcast, starting with facial evaluation. Like, look, listen, follow, subscribe, ask questions. We love to answer questions about these things. And we'll look forward to seeing you again next time on Aesthetic Revolution, the podcast. Thanks.